Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 21st, 2006. Our session today is entitled, What's It All About, Alpha? Our presenter is Katie Hansen, session number HAK 2006-3. Let's listen in.
And I'm Katie Hansen, and so we are officially starting our session. And I work at Augustana in Rock Island. I teach English there, and I also teach future teachers. And then I go to St. Paul Lutheran in Danforth, Iowa, and there I coordinate the Alpha program. And so I thought if there were people interested in knowing about that program, that we have done it at our church three times, so I thought I could talk a little bit about how it's worked for us. And I brought two people who have participated as well so that they can talk about how it has worked for them. So we might as well get started then. ALPHA is actually an acronym, and it stands for anyone, because it is a wide open forum for people, and we have had a huge range of people come to our programs. We've had initially a lot of people from the church itself came out of curiosity, and that's a good thing. And then more and more we're getting, when the word gets out, outside people from either other churches who don't have an ALPHA or people who just have no church are coming. So it's absolutely for anyone. The L is supposed to stand for learning and laughter, because there are parts of the evening every time that involve listening to a talk, and so hopefully there's some learning. And the laughter thing is because people seem to really enjoy being together in the ALPHA program. And William Zinsser once said, what I want to do is to make people laugh so they'll see things clearly. And I think that is a part of making connections to other people. And then when we laugh, we enjoy and we pay attention. So, the P is for people, or we sometimes talk about how it's for pasta, because we have a lot of it when we eat together. The H is for helping, because everybody is sort of helping understand the questions. And the A is for ask anything, and that's an absolute, everything is wide open to be asked. And of course, Alpha is the first letter of the alphabet. It means beginning, so it's also appropriate that it is that word as well. Because for a lot of people who have no church or maybe even anti-church, coming to an Alpha program can be the beginning of their faith life. So it's pretty appropriate acronym. It was started in England at Holy Trinity Church in 1977 by a man named Charles Marnham, and it was his idea that he wanted to present the basic principles of Christianity to non-church-going people, and he wanted it to be relaxed and informal and wide open, and so he came up with this concept. And his original idea was it was 4 weeks long. And then in 1981, John Irvin took it over, and he expanded it to 10 weeks plus a weekend away. So it really grew into something. And then in 1985, the current leader is Nikki Gumbel, and he took it on. And when he did, he had about 35 people in a class. That grew to about 100 in a class. And now they have about 1,000 in a class three times a year at this huge church that he works at. The basic philosophy of the program is that belonging comes before believing. And so it's all about building relationships with people and allowing people to question and have their feelings, whatever they are, whether they're upset with the church or scared of the church or whatever they are feeling, and start to make connections with people at the churches, and then hopefully feel comfortable enough to begin their journey. And so it's based on friendship and trust. It also is a sort of heart and mind connection as well, because part of every evening is listening and thinking about ideas, and a huge part of every evening is relationship building with people in your group. And so it's a very strong program, I think, because it does address both parts of a good relationship. And it really relies on spirit-filled people like we have here who are on my team, who use their gifts of hospitality and acceptance and joy to bring people in. So it's pretty great. Now more than 4 million people have taken Alpha classes in 133 countries and in many denominations. This is across denominations, Baptist, Catholic, Anglican, Methodist, UCC, Presbyterian, everywhere.
So let's get the picture here. You couldn't possibly be building relationships with 1,000 people at one time.
Yeah.
So this is probably broken up into smaller groups.
Yeah. So I thought I'd describe the program and how it happened at St. Paul is somebody got and I heard of it. And there are training programs all over the United States, actually all over the world. And we sent a couple people out and they went and came back and said, you know, it looks like a possibility. So then they asked me if I would go also and then come back and try to set something up. And the idea, it's evangelizing, you know, and the idea of evangelizing in the Lutheran Church isn't very common, at least not with the Norwegian Lutherans that we associate with. And so we looked at the program very carefully, and we had to figure out a way to make sure that the program, the way we presented it at our church, represented our theology and our way of worshiping and so on, so that it wouldn't be a bait and switch or something where someone would come and think, oh, you're this kind of church, and then really once they're in, we're not. And so we had to do a little bit of tweaking of the program as it is to make it ours. But essentially, yeah, we bring in people sign up to come, and we really love the fact that the first time that we had it, we had about 180 people, and about 165 or something were our own members. And that might sound like preaching to the choir, but it was very important because nobody knew what it was. And so we needed our membership to know what it was, to go through it and to experience it so that then they would feel comfortable suggesting to their coworker or their neighbor or their friend that they might want to come next time. And so it was actually a really good thing that so many of our own members came. And the second time we offered it, we had something like 80 or 90, and again, over half of them were our members. But already we could see a shift that people had started to pass the word to others. And we have these brochures that are always around the church and that we put into our bulletins a few key times of the year, Christmas, Easter, when you get the people who don't come very often. We have a jazz service in the summer that's highly attended, and we make sure to put the brochures in then. And anytime right before we're going to start a new session, we do two sessions a year in the fall and the spring. And then they're just around and about. And we started up something too where we have everyone on the staff think of people that we might invite. And they give me their names and I write a personal invitation to people. We also always invite all our new members to come. And that's a really good way for them to learn about our church and also to meet other people so that they immediately get connected. And so we personally invite all of them as well. And then we have publicity. Our church is on a big main street. And so we put out a big banner that announces that we're starting a session soon. It's got our phone number on it. And we put an ad in the newspaper. And we have our senior pastor is Peter Marty, and he does the Grace Matters radio show. And so we usually get a plug in at the end of that on our local broadcast. And we also have our website. So we website, and we post it on that website. And that website's really handy because you can put your church information there. It's all free. And then they, someone can just say, well, I'm really interested, what's the closest one? And they can go in and say, well, I don't want to go more than 15 miles away, or I'm willing to go 30, whatever they put in, and the computer will search and tell them all the closest alphas that are going on. And so we've had people actually find us through that as well. And then there's word of mouth, where people just are talking to someone and they say, hey, you might be interested in doing this. And then they bring them. And we try to encourage them, if you suggest it to someone, that maybe you should come with them and go through the session with them, because they're more likely to stay if they're anchored and they feel connected to someone. So once we know roughly how many people we're going to have, it's usually down to the wire that we accept applications. Then we look for, we have a list of people who have indicated they're interested in being leaders. And so then we have a training night, and we have folders that we put together that have the brochure and information about the schedule, and we have some things that we like to talk with them about in terms of training, about hospitality issues. We talk a lot about that, and then about small group leadership, because that's a very important aspect, and there are, that's definitely a skill about not talking too much and getting people to talk, and how do you deal with somebody who's angry, or if they say something really off the wall, or those kinds of things. And then we have some information with them, for them, about some additional resources, because a lot of times people will say, well, I would like to read something, what can I read? And so we give them that. And then we sort of walk them through what a session is going to be like, so they can be ready to go. And then we usually do all that training. And then there's a little bit of time in the training for them to get to know one another, and definitely to get to know their partner, because every small group will have a leader and a co-leader. And we do that partly because then if somebody's absent, the group is not without a leader. And also, some people don't want to do it alone, but they're willing to do it with someone else. And so it's a nice give and take. And we try to match the leadership styles and hopefully make for a good group experience. We also, on the brochure, when people send in that they want to participate, we have in the brochure, we ask them their age, roughly, in categories, their gender, if they are, where they are in terms of their church going, if they've never, or if they are associated with another church, or, and, think of what else we ask them. And if they want to be with someone else, if they have someone in mind they know is going to take the course. And we do that because we very carefully go through all of the applications, and we try to make sure that there is no one group that is all one gender or all one age group. And so we like to scatter the young people in all the groups, and then we'll go sort of by decades and scatter them around. And people have really appreciated that. Well, when we do our questionnaire at the end, people have commented over and over how they just have really enjoyed getting to know some of these people who they probably never would have spoken to or sought out at coffee hour, because they just aren't near the same age, 20-year-old and a 7-year-old in the same group. So we did that purposely, and it seems to be working. And then we provide daycare or childcare, which we have found is very, very important if we want the young people to come, because they just, it's free, and then it makes it easier for them. And we also provide food, which then we ask for a free will offering. And so if you can't afford it, you can still come, so that's okay. And let's see, how evening goes, if you're curious about that. Around 5:30, we bring in the food, and the dinner crew shows up. And we have a dinner crew who's responsible. We try to make the tables look nice, nicer than just eating in a cafeteria or something. And we have this in our church basement. So we have table decorations and candles. And they put out the napkins and the silverware so people don't have to carry out this stuff when they go through the line. And then the food arrives, and they arrange all the food and get everything ready to go. So that when the people show up around 6:15 or so, we can get them through the line, get them seated. And we have all the groups eat as a group because we think it's really important that they're talking, just chit-chat while they're eating, and that's a really good way to connect. And then later, when they move to their other talks, they've already sort of gotten all the chit-chat out of the way, and they can focus, but also they've been able to do both. And we tried one time, remember, that was a disaster. We tried one time, we thought, you know, I bet people would like to meet other people besides their group, you know? So we randomly mixed them up all over the place. We put their name tags all over the place, and they had to sit with people from lots of different groups for a couple of weeks.
Just one.
It was just one.
Just one.
It felt like more.
Well,
and they ate it
for 2 weeks, and
we rebelled. They rebelled. They did not like not sitting with their groups because they missed that chit-chat time, and they wanted to know what had happened during the week, and they didn't have that time to talk.
And some people were just still shy and uncomfortable. And
yeah,
and they started to feel safe in their little group.
And then we made them unsafe again. So we decided that was a bad idea, and we went back to the old way. So we learned along the way some of the things not to do. We have a dinner prayer and welcome and announcements, and after they're done eating, we have about 10 minutes of music. And we try to have a couple of songs that fit with the theme of that evening, whatever the question is that we're discussing. And that goes okay. People are a little reluctant to sing with people they don't know, but we've tried to do some traditional hymns and some more camp, lighter sort of things, and they grow into it by the end of the time. And then we have a 20-minute talk by our pastor. Now, the program, actually, you can purchase tapes, videotapes. They're 40 minutes long, each talk. And we decided as a team that we did not want the evening to go on forever. And that also that the tapes were by Nicky Gumbel. He's a very energetic, charismatic speaker, but he's British and he has an accent. And he also tells jokes, but they're kind of British humor and not everyone gets it. And then 40 minutes, you know. So we just decided, no, we're gonna do that. So our pastors decided to divvy up the different topics and to also look through the materials and bring it from a Lutheran perspective and compress it to 20 minutes, and that has worked very well. So they do a 20-minute talk, and we give everyone a certain outline of some of the main points so that they can take notes if they like. And then they get their coffee and they head off to discussion groups with their leaders. And we scatter them all over the building. Everybody gets their own room. So they have, and they always go to the same place, which they really like. Kind of like people always want to sit in the same pew. They all want to go to the same room. And then they have approximately 45 minutes to discuss. And then we have an all-over church chime that goes off 5 minutes before the end to warn them that we gotta wrap it up. And then at the very end, we added something after our first session, and that is that if somebody still really needs to talk about something or has a question, we have the pastor who did the talk that night stay and be in a room in the building that that person can go and talk to them if they are upset or still have a question. Because we found through our questionnaires that people would want to talk after the 20-minute talk. They want to ask questions and respond, but there isn't time for that in the evening. And if we did that, we would never get to our discussions. So we just don't let them do that, but then we allow them to do that at the end of the evening if they want. question, because some of the topics are big deal topics. The topics that we use are, is Christianity necessary or relevant for my life? That's the first topic. That's a biggie. The second one, they talk about who is Jesus. The third week, we talk about why did Jesus die. The fourth week, why and how do I read the Bible? The fifth is, what do I make of evil in the world? And the sixth week is, does God work miracles today? And then the last week is, what is the church? And then we have one Saturday session that we ask them to come to that's about week five-ish. And in it, we spend most of the time talking about spirit and faith. And so we do four little mini talks during that day. Who is the Holy Spirit? Why should we talk about our Christian faith? How can I be sure of my faith? And why and how do I pray? And so we do those later because those are a little bit harder topics, you know, the Holy Spirit, and about prayer. And so if you're dealing with already Christians, that's not a problem. But if you're dealing with people who are non-churchgoers, those are kind of scary questions or touchy. And so we'd like to put them a little bit later in the whole setup. And even though the original program, the Alpha program, is 14 weeks long, well, we decided right away that was too much for at least our particular congregation. We just felt like we would probably get dropping off of attendance, and if the whole point is to build community, it's really hard to do that. People quit coming. And so we had the first time we narrowed it down to 10 sessions, and that even felt too long. And so then we narrowed it down to 8. And this fall, I don't know if you guys know this, we're actually cutting it down to 7 sessions and moving a little bit more to Saturdays. Because that way we get done before school lets out in spring, because we start after Easter and we try to get done before school lets out. And in the fall, we like to start a few weeks after school has started and people kind of get into their routine, but also be done before Advent. So it's hard to fit things into that calendar, and we decided that this would work better.
Did you say you're moving some of the more of the topics to the Saturday?
Yeah.
But not adding another Saturday?
No. We just shifted our 8th week to our 8th week talk to Saturday, and it seemed to fit in terms of topic matter. So that's what we're going to try this fall. And it's really, we're trying to accommodate people's lives, and we want them to do this. And we don't want them to feel like it's a burden. And on the other hand, they need a certain amount of time to get to that tipping point of feeling comfortable and feeling connected. And so, you know, I think we're just about on the cusp where we can't go any shorter than that. It's pretty important to get, because it's usually around week 4 or 5 where people really get it and they really start to connect and really it makes a difference. So that leads me to the last thing, and that is we have noticed that there is an alpha effect, that there is a point around week 4 where things just click. It's just phenomenal. It's really interesting to watch group behavior. And I'm a teacher, so I see this happen in classrooms too, where it takes a couple of weeks before kids will discuss. Before they're comfortable and their writing changes, their talking in class changes, everything changes after they start to trust each other. And it's the same with Alpha. And we've noticed that people will start to go to church together. And we have had some amazing things happen from these groups. We've had one person, two times ago, who came as an invited guest. She was a non-member. She actually admitted on the first day to her leaders that she doesn't set foot in church, because not even for weddings or funerals, that she just was extremely anti-church. Something had happened where she just felt like church people were hypocrites and she would have nothing to do with them. But somehow this neighbor got her to come. So she did come.
And she came, and after about 6 weeks, she actually approached her group and asked them if they would meet her and go to church with her. And it was her idea. And so they all agreed that they would go and meet at the donut area and go to church together. And she was really scared about it because she hadn't been in a church for so long. So that Alpha night, they actually went upstairs to the church, and they sat in a pew. They figured out, you know, this would be a good place to sit. And then they met her in the donut area. There were about four of them who met her. And they all went to church together. And it was just this phenomenal thing, especially because she was there with her husband. And her husband that morning decided, no, I'm going to sleep in instead. And she still came. So we were really astounded by that. She had a complete change of heart and mind about it. She hasn't joined the church, but she does come. And so that's pretty miraculous. But I'm going to let Jan and Jan talk about some of their experiences. Jan Applin has been a leader three different times. And she is just like the queen of hospitality. She does some great things, and she's such a good model for our other leaders because she just jumps right in there. And I know you won't say this, so I'm going to say it about you. She comes early, and she sets up her room to make it so comfortable for her people. She brings in little candies and leaves them on the table. And when her room was cold during one session, she brought her own little personal heater and set it up early so the room wouldn't be uncomfortable, and brings in hot cocoa mix and all kinds of things. So her group always gels really fast. They're just like, oh, we love Jan. But Jan's had at least one in particular fantastic experience that I wish you would share.
It was the very first experience, and I had not attended Alpha as no one else had except Katie. And I didn't quite know what this was going to be like because I feel, you know, like a baby in my faith. But when I was told that there are no answers, there's only questions, I thought, well, you know, I can listen. So we were given the worst room in the church, I just want you to know. In the basement, it was cold, the cement or tile floors, and it was winter and it was cold. And I am a hospitality person, so I had a basket of chocolates and coffee and teas, and we brought a heater, and we tried to make the room as comfortable as possible. And the very first night, you know, most of the members were St. Paul people, but we got Cynthia. And Cynthia came with a neighbor that she knew, and Cynthia professed the first night when we went around and made introductions that she was an atheist, that she was raised as an atheist, or raised by a mother who was an atheist, and it didn't take long to figure out Cynthia was very, very angry. And we also had a 90-year-old man in our group who had lifelong church man who was very certain of his faith and had no questions whatsoever. So we had, you know, the spectrum. The first week wasn't too bad. I wasn't too put off by Cynthia, although, you know, you get the little, she's a lovely lady. But I wasn't quite sure what was ahead. And week two was, which the topic is, who is Jesus? Got a little rockier. And, you know, she was very outspoken. And not mean, but outspoken and very angry. And she had had many encounters through her life with people, especially when she was young, telling her she was going to go to hell because she wasn't raised in the church, and that just stuck with her. And she had searched, she had done searching. She had tried this church thing, religion thing different times, and it just, you know, she thought church people were hypocrites. She thought, you know, why would I even want to bother with this? Week three got really ugly because something was said in one of the topic or the talk that night, and she just sat down at the table and around our table, and the first words out of her mouth is, "Why would I even want to worship a God who would kill innocent children?" And you know, you just sit there sort of in stunned silence, and I don't have an answer for her. And yes, the Bible, there, God does, you know, do some wicked things. And She spewed for about 15 minutes, and we just let her talk. And when she was done, she pretty much just sat back and said, okay, I said what I have to say. She crossed her arms and she said, I'll be quiet. Well, she was quiet, but it was very obvious that she, I mean, I figured she'd get up and bolt at any moment. She just had that posture that she was not going to be there at the end of the night. And as soon as the session was over, she just bolted out the door. And I talked to Pastor Marty that night, and I talked to Katie and the co-leader, and we just really tried to figure out. I was worried about what it was doing to the rest of the group, and where do we go with this? And I waited till about, this was Monday night, I waited till about Wednesday, and I emailed her. And I just said, you know, I didn't really address what had happened. I just said, you know, that I really appreciated her honestness, and I appreciated her questions, and that, you know, I'm sorry I didn't have any answers for her, but that I just appreciated her as a person. And I said, you know, you really make me think about my own faith, and you really make me question things, and that's good for me. And I'll see you Monday night, fully expecting that I would say Monday. And she emailed me back, and she said, I cried all the way home. It was awful. You know, I'm confused. I just don't know about this. But I thank you for your email, and I'll see you Monday. And our room, you know, had been cold, and we had been trying to find ways to make it better and everything. And she walked in Monday night and sat down at the dinner table. And when she walked in, she was a different person. Her demeanor was different. Her face was different. She carried herself different, and she sat down and she said, you know, I've been thinking, we could go to Katie and see if we could find a different room so that it would be more comfortable and it would be cozier. And you know, it's like, who is this woman? And from that moment on, Cynthia was someone different. She still had questions. She still pushed the envelope. She still was always the one that, you know, had the first and the last word, but she was different. And everybody, we never talked about it as a group, you know, we didn't talk to each other outside and say, what are we going to do with Cynthia? It was just within the co-leader and myself and the staff. And I don't know to this day how the other people felt, but they hung in there with her. And after week six, on Monday night, then the following Sunday, I looked up and she was sitting in church with her husband. And her husband was a church person, but had obviously chosen not to go to church because of how she felt. Less than a year later, they joined the church, and her kids are in Sunday school, and they are there every single Sunday. And she is a totally different person. She co-led second session, a group, and during a time when her mother was dying of cancer, the mother of the atheist, and her mother died shortly during that session. She still has tons of questions, but she's, I think, living the questions instead of avoiding the questions. And, you know, the other two groups, I had totally different experiences. All of them wonderful, but all of them different. I sometimes wonder why that happened in the beginning, and yet I think it was good because it did teach me that if you just listen and show them that you care about them no matter where they're at, that if nothing else, they see a different side of what the church is and how it's okay to have questions. And I think the other neat thing about the program is that it doesn't matter if a person's been in church for 20 years or 10 years. People that I would consider very strong Christians in our church still struggle with questions, and to be able to give them a forum where they feel comfortable being able to ask those questions. You know, I always wondered about that, but I didn't think anybody else felt that way. It's really good. And the intergenerational thing is the best part, I think, of the whole thing, is to be able to have people from different generations interact with each other. And I love the program. I think it's just really done great things for our church, because we're a large church. And there's not a lot of times in a large church you can be in a small group setting for 7-8 weeks together and really get to feel like you've known people. And I've made some great friendships and relationships with people that I never would have ever come connected with. And it's great for new members, because it gets you right in, and then you see people and they're from your group and you remember that. So I think it's great.
And I don't think I mentioned this, but one of the things about the whole program, and especially the way we do it at St. Paul, is it's not Bible-based. I mean, the talks are the things that the pastors talk about for 20 minutes, but then when we put them out into their discussion groups, they have specific questions that the pastors have created to sort of spin off of the talks. And almost every week they start with sort of warm-up, a sort of, more of a light way into the questions, and then they have way more questions than they ever get to. But we decided right from the start that we weren't going to have Bibles on the table, and we weren't going to be citing Bible verses at people, because that is one of the scary things for people. And then they feel like an outsider. Well, I don't know those things, so I can't come, or I can't participate in the discussion. Or feel like they're being preached at about these things. Or a lot of, there are times when people might pull Bible verses out of context and it could be misconstrued or misused. And so it seems weird to people, especially leaders at the training, and usually the first thing they'll say is, well, where are the Bibles? But it isn't a Bible study. That's what it isn't. And it's more about just the big issues of being a Christian person in this world and questioning how we do that. And,
but you did say that you're doing it from Lutheran theology.
Yeah, because Lutherans are big on grace. And we didn't see any of that really in any of the materials. And so there is a slight twist to ours. And the handout that I gave you is some suggestions that there are other options out there too. If a church thinks that Alpha is too conservative or that it has a particular bent. That was the other thing. There's a lot of publications involved with Alpha. There are just tons of manuals and all kinds of individual booklets that you can give to the leaders and to every single participant, and then they have all these little sub-booklets on all these different topics that you could buy, and we just don't buy any of that stuff. Because we didn't want it to... Well, we read a lot of it, and not everything fit with how we view theology. And it was just, we just thought it would muddy the waters or confuse things, and that would be that whole bait and switch thing where they might think we really believe that, but we don't. And so we just don't use it at all. And we use the basic ideas and the questions that they use, and the whole setup that they use, and the talks that the pastors have done are basically the same outline as the Alpha original, but there were just some things that we don't believe, so we don't want to say it. But this article from Christian Century talks about there is another series called Living the Questions, and it's a liberal perspective on Alpha, and there's also another one called Beginnings that comes from the United Methodist Church that is a spin, a similar view, but asking different questions and sort of taking it in a different direction. And if you look online, there are a couple others out there too. So I think there are enough alternatives that you can find something that will work for whatever your denomination is or whatever, however your church chooses the direction that they would like to go. But that was my first question, particularly when they sent me to go to a session. And I found some of the things very off-putting. And so, you know, of course I knew I was going to have to come back and start this program. And so the whole time I'm thinking, do I believe that? Do I want to do that? And so, as soon as I came back, that was my first concern that I addressed to the staff and to the pastors as well. Are you serious that we're going to do this, this, and this? And immediately they all said, no, that's not our perspective. I don't think that would be right. It's not wrong, it's just a different perspective. And we found that some of the brochures, you know, you really have to read them carefully, because some of them maybe have a perspective on homosexuality that your church may or not agree with, or on sexuality in general. And there were things like that that were some red flags that there were just a few things that didn't fit. So. But there's a lot of material out there. And one thing that was helpful if you decide you want to run a program is this book, which is called How to Run an Alpha Course. And it's supposed to be a handbook for whoever your coordinator is. And that was a good handy start. We didn't do everything that it said, but it gives you timelines, like 6 months out you need to do this, and 3 months out you better have this done. And it also sort of lays out all the different kinds of volunteers that you need in order to do it well. And so that was very helpful, especially the first time. It just seemed like, what have I done? Because we had 18 groups the first time. And so that was 36 co-leaders that we were working with.
How many had per group? How many people did you try to get per group?
Oh, we try to keep the groups to 10. And so 8 participants and then 2 co-leaders. Partly it's a logistic issue that we wanted to fit around the table when they're eating. And partly because we felt like any more than that, and you're going to easily be able to fade into the background and not talk, and no one will notice. And so we decided that 8 participants. Then, 2, if a couple are absent, you still have enough people to talk, and then they don't feel like it's just us, you know. Like, this is kind of small for a small group. A few more would be better. And the other thing is that Jan sort of alluded to, and that is we really track the people carefully. We have permanent laminated, you know, on a string name tags for everyone. And we have the group numbers on them. And each week we lay those out, and the group leaders hand them out. The first couple of weeks we're very careful about handing them and greeting them at the door and getting them down, because where we go is down in the basement, and our church feels like a maze to new people. And so we have some greeters at the door, some people who lead the people down to the basement, take them right to their table, introduce them to the other leader who is waiting at the table, and who then introduces them to the new people around the table. And so there's no point where the person is just kind of wandering around. Yeah, what do I do? And then from then on, whatever name tags are left on the table after the evening has started, then I will give the information to that leader, or they will take note of it if I'm away from the table at that time. And then we ask them to email that person during the week or give them a call and just find out if they're okay, you know, or are you ill, or, you know, just to let them know that we noticed that they weren't there and that we would really like them to come back. And that really helps us retain people. Occasionally, we've had a few people who drop out because they say, well, something came up at work and now I don't have my Monday nights free. I'm traveling a lot this month or something. And they recognize that it's really important to be there. We don't say, you know, if you miss once, that's it, you know, you're out. But we try to make it clear to them from the get-go that this is a 8-week commitment, and we really hope you can be here the whole time, because it's, we'll miss you if you're not, we miss out on your participation, and we need to all be connected. And so that, I think, helps us keep people in the program. And
it's a large church, that they are a noticeable presence, and we know when they're not there.
That's my church is also large, probably not as large as yours, but we are continually looking for ways to integrate people early on,
yeah,
and to connect them with somebody, make sure that somebody's following up on them, and find out what they're interested in, what their talents are, so we can plug them into some, you know, additional group, choir, you know, children's stuff, whatever. And it's a continual problem. And we can't use the same thing all the time. It doesn't work either.
Right.
You know, you have readers, we have new members, have sponsors, some are better than others, and so some get followed up on and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how the hospitality side of this, especially for new members or people truly searching,
mm-hmm.
The connection to somebody who is going to follow up and ask, and you know, if the leader doesn't seem to be connecting, somebody else in the group can make the connection.
Right.
I'm a card person, always have been, I think. So one thing I've done in my three groups, and I don't know if it makes a difference or not, but I write everybody a note in the group after the second, third week, I write them a note. And I'll do it on the computer, do the handwriting, because you know, I found out people, that doesn't happen a lot anymore. Mm-hmm. People really do feel sort of special.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always write them a note at the end when it's over, a card, and give it to them. And I think the touches, you know, true, of chocolate on the table. I mean, you know,
people
like
chocolate.
And just anything you can do to make them feel that you care, that they're there, that the group cares that they're there. It's a relationship thing. And if you get them, they will talk about anything if they will feel comfortable and trust. And I think the other thing that's happened with my groups, and I think I've been very, very lucky, is I've had very good attendance. That first group, we had one person that dropped out. She only came the first week and never came again. But the other groups, there's been very few times we've had people missing, and I think that really makes a difference, because they have truly been together and have felt that connection by the end. It's like, oh, we don't want to leave.
Yeah.
Because they have connected with each other and they feel bonded with each other. And they seek each other out. Some couples, two young couples I know, that got to be best friends because they met through there, and one couple was new to the church.
And when you have couples, do you put them in the same group?
If they want to.
If they want to.
Yeah.
We give them a choice. And occasionally a couple doesn't want to. You know, they just want to meet new people and have their own group. Almost all the time they want to be in the same group.
And it's okay. In some instances, in my first group did not work well. Never did gel, never worked well. There was a very strong, dominant husband who had all the answers, and that was it. And once he made his statements, the whole group was sort of like, okay, I guess I won't say anything now. But his wife would never say boo.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was very non-comfortable for everybody.
And that's a problem, and we have to figure out how to, we try to address that. We try to not step in, you know, and try to leave it to the co-leaders to work out a way. We have occasionally had to speak to an individual and just say, you know, talking about group, and you know, everyone gets to have an opinion, and you know, trying to encourage them to lay back a little bit. But we try to stay out of it and see what happens. And something, because you know, what if we had told Cynthia to knock it off? You know, so we, a lot of times it works out. But some groups, yeah, they just don't.
Some groups don't.
But when they do, then it's great, because then they come to you after the 8 weeks and they, well, what else have you got? You know, what other Bible studies? So we always offer it the last week
so we tried to provide a place for that. And a few groups have continued with Bible studies after, or sometimes just part of a group, you know, just like three or four women I know of one group decided to continue and the rest of the group didn't, and that's okay too.
The other great thing is you have to have a good coordinator. Katie won't say this, but you have somebody that the leaders can go to. And you know, she's always available, at, especially after each session, for the leaders to go to and say, you know, this happened tonight. You know, what should I do? And then the night before Cynthia came back that time when I figured she would be off the wall, Katie and I, the co-leader, sat down an hour before that session and talked about strategies. Like, what are we going to do tonight? How are we? Well, we didn't have to.
Yeah.
It worked itself out. But to have a coordinator who's open and willing to be able to work with you, because you're the ones that are, you know, groups, you can't prepare for it. You know, we have the questions. We know what the pastor's going to say. We have an outline of his talk or her talk. We know. But when you get into a group setting, you're on your own because you don't know what people are going to say and what their responses are. So just having somebody who will listen to you and say, well, why don't you try this, or maybe try this, that's really important.
Well, and then halfway through, I really try to support them but stay out of it. When they're eating, I try to sit at a different table every week just to get to know people and to chat them up. But I never go to any of the groups. Because I feel like the outside presence of another person is just going to change the dynamics, and they just don't need that. and so if they're going great guns, I'm just going to stay out. But about halfway through, I try to have a short meeting with all the co-leaders, have them stay after just half an hour, and we sort of reconvene and try to find out if there are any problems that we need to deal with, even just logistics, like, you know, is there enough time to dinner for dinner, or are you feeling rushed and that sort of thing, so that if we have to tweak, we can. And then again at the end, we also have a sort of decompression meeting where we talk about what went well and what they've heard that they would like to change, and we try to tweak it every time and be responsive to what we're hearing in terms of feedback. And then we've also found, I've had a couple of other churches contact me and ask, well, we'd like to start up a program. How do you do this? And so I've had people come and meet, and we share our resources and talk about the timelines and offer support so that they can get started. And so that's been really great, too. Do you have other questions?
I'm just translating it to my congregation.
Into your congregation, yeah.
One thing we're facing is that we're going to be moving. We're going to be building a new building.
Uh-huh.
And there's, at this point, the last time I heard, we may be able to stay where we are until the move is done. But there's also a possibility the church is going to be homeless for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, it was definitely that we were going to be homeless for a while. And so we've been, for ages, been trying to find ways to keep the connections alive during this time of transition. And I'm just wondering if having something structured like this that could be open to everybody across generational lines and mix people up, would be, I can see how it would be helpful. I'm wondering if it would be practical.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot would depend on the facilities we had.
Yeah.
And if we were still in our existing building, we could certainly do it. But it might be difficult to bring outsiders outside of our congregation in during that kind of.
But you could not open it up to.
Yeah.
I mean, that first time we didn't have any advertising.
Yeah, the people we got were not from our church, were just word of mouth, and you know, of course, anyone can come anytime, so that was great. But we didn't go looking the first time because we just wanted to get it figured out, get all the kinks out, and
yeah.
So that would be fine to do within your congregation. It definitely builds a certain camaraderie.
But it's so demonic. I don't think it. I mean, it is. It may be during that alpha time when you're in your group, but after it's over, it's not like it creates cliques in the church that you don't want.
No.
I have not felt that that's been a problem at all.
But it does create friendships.
Yeah.
Yeah, and our congregation is pretty responsive to seminars or special events or weekend retreat kinds of things. So, and we have had, I'm a little out of touch, but we had, do you know what, the Disciple Bible Study program is? Okay, we had two groups initially. One group went to the second year, and probably, because they're still doing it, we have for the third year, probably beginning in the fall. And that's been a very effective way to get small groups together, but it's not open. I mean, these people sign up and agree and make the commitment to do this, so there's not this kind of people moving in and out kind of thing. It's different from that. And it's Bible study. It's very deliberately, very intensive Bible study. So,
and for some people, Bible study is really scary.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, these are not people. These are all church members who have made a decision that they want. This is something they want to do. Actually, I was in one of the first disciple studies that was done sort of when it first came out, and that was like 15 years ago or something. But it hasn't changed a whole lot. Maybe it's been tweaked, but it's still pretty much the same.
Well, our time is up.
Thank you.
Keep talking about it, but it's an interesting program. When I first started, I thought, we went into Chicago, to the suburbs there. They run all kinds of them throughout the year, six or eight. And once, if you go to alphausa.org and you get on that, their mailing with their email list, it's ongoing everywhere all the time. So it's pretty, and it's simple to get connected. And then they have special programs. They have like Alpha in the college. They have Alpha daytime for at home parents. They have Alpha weekend things. They have Alpha marriage stuff. So they're it's this huge market of stuff, and we just do Monday nights, and that's been working, so we haven't really looked to do daytime and branch out.
One problem that our church faces is that we are in downtown Seattle, and we have no parking. And on Sundays, we have an arrangement with the parking garage across the street. And on Saturdays, even, you have to pay $5 on Saturday, but still, you can stay all day wherever you go. But weekday parking, especially to get down at 5:30, is a huge problem. First is the traffic.
That would be awful.
And
5:30,
then,
yeah.
And then the parking. It used to be that if you came in after 6, you could park free for the rest of the night. But then they changed it to you had to be in by 7, so you couldn't have a meeting at 7:30. You had to set it up so that you could get into the garage by 7 o'clock, and that meant you put people back a half hour into the traffic.
Yeah.
And Seattle traffic is horrible, truly horrible.
Is that one of the reasons you're moving? Will it be better?
The parking is it's just one component of why we're moving, and yes, we will be building parking into the construction. As an adjacent or an underground, whatever. We had all our plans laid out, all the architecture, the building plans done, and this opportunity came up to move to this different location. And we made a commitment years ago that we were going to stay in the downtown area. We have a very large ministry to the homeless, and our building is used for all kinds of things all the time, including one end of a peace march or an ecumenical public service or something. And so we looked for another location, and that wasn't going to work, so we decided to build on the site that we were on and got all this done. And then a really unexpected opportunity came to move about 3 miles down to the other end, to the north end of downtown. So it's a different location, and it's perfectly flat. We're on a hill, and everything was built to incorporate this hill and to angle the signs and stuff so that they could be seen from different directions. And now we're on this perfectly flat, basically vacant piece of property. But the guy who owns that is willing to let us build there, and then he'll take over our building, which he will. It will have to be leveled, and piece of land.
Sounds like a complicated lesson. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you very much, but this is complicating our lives.
Yes. Well, the sanctuary is 100 years old, and we've had a lot of people who know nothing about our church or our ministry or anything like that who insist that we can't tear the building down.
Yeah.
Oh yes, for preservation.
So every time they go to court and it gets thrown out, they just go to the next hard court and file it again. The last time I heard this, it was headed for the state Supreme Court, but the state Supreme Court probably will not hear the case because it's been shut, it's been thrown out, not even heard, but thrown out by all the lower courts.
Oh my goodness. So, yeah, just when you think church is about faith, well, isn't.
Well,
thank you for coming.
Yes.